Sarah Lowe, and I'm interviewing Mrs. Ortha Parmalee of Monroe, Michigan. Mrs. Parmalee, were you born in Monroe?
Yes, I was born in Bedford Township on a farm that's been in the family since 1832. It's rather interesting in that my great-grandfather took this land out from the government when they had the Toledo War, before that, really, which was a dispute. You know, the Toledo War was a dispute of the boundary line between Ohio and Michigan, and when they finally settled it, the boundary line went right through the farm. Consequently, half of it was in Ohio and half was in Michigan.
Did your grandfather fight in the war?
No, he didn't. He went west in the gold rush and he never really came back. My great-grandmother maintained the farm from that time on, and my grandfather was her only son, and the rest were girls. So she did quite well, I think, to maintain the farm by herself. My father bought the farm from his brother and his sister, their share.
Were you born on the farm?
Yes, I was born in a house on that farm, not in the original house, but in the one that my father had built.
Was there a nurse?
No, I imagine that my mother had a midwife along with a doctor.
I can't even imagine not being born in the hospital with the security of so many doctors and nurses. What about your schooling?
Well, I went to a country school, Liberty Corners. It was a mile and a half from home and we walked. Of course, no school buses. I had two brothers and we all three went to that school. It was a one-room schoolhouse. We learned all the basics. Of course, we learned them very well because we learned by repetition. After hearing the same thing for 8 years, we certainly knew it. Well, actually, I went through in 7 years because 1 year I skipped a grade, so I really went through in 7 years.
Did you go on to high school?
Yes, I went to Lambertville High School, and at that time, Lambertville was not consolidated. It later, as you know, became Bedford, but when I went there, Lambertville, it was a small school. In fact, the Lambertville school had been demolished by a tornado, and I debated whether to go to Temperance, where they had a high school, or to Lambertville. Lambertville was going to build a new school, and so I went to Lambertville. The first year we were there, we went to a small church that they had converted into a school, and then by my sophomore year, they had the new school built.
How large was it?
I don't remember the enrollment, but I do remember that because the school had not started in my freshman year, we didn't have very many students, so by the time we graduated, there were only six in our graduating class. In later years, my husband used to say that, you know, a third of our class are sleeping together.
Well, that's you and him, right?
Later, yes. Not in high school.
No. That's good to know. Did you go to college?
Yes, I went from Lambertville to Albion College. I only went to Albion 2 years. Actually, I should have transferred before my sophomore year, but I liked it so well there, I stayed. I couldn't get my major, which was physical education at Albion. It was not offered there. I, of course, shopped around, and my first thought was the University of Michigan. However, they did not have a major in physical education for women at that time. All they had were classes for freshmen and sophomore students. I think they were probably required to take physical education. But they had no major, and so I went to Ohio State where they had an excellent program in physical education for women. We had comparative and human anatomy in the med school there, so it was very thorough.
When did you start teaching?
Right out of college. The first and only job that I had until I was married was in Van Wert High School. And the first year I taught physical education in the high school in biology because my minor was biological science. But I went there with the promise that I would have full-time physical education. So the second and third year that I taught there, I taught girls who sat in high school and I supervised in their four elementary schools.
So then you married your high school sweetheart?
No, he wasn't my high school sweetheart, but he was my high school friend. We had been friends for... Well, we've known each other since we were about 8 years old. See, his father was our family doctor, and our two dads had hunted together for deer hunting in the Upper Peninsula for over 40 years, or 50 years together. In fact, they hunted when you used to have to go up there by train, and then were met by a sleigh and taken into the woods where they camped.
It's amazing how dedicated men can be when they're doing something they like.
Right, they were. His mother was my piano teacher, too, and our families were good friends, and so we were good friends, too. And, of course, we went all through high school together. We double dated, and I did have a few dates with him in high school. But he seemed almost like a brother to me. You know, we knew each other so well. And in those days, I loved to dance, and he wasn't a good dancer.
Oh, no?
No. That was my criteria, I guess, good-looking and good dancer. But our dating patterns were so different. We would date anyone who asked us. We believed that it would hurt a boy's feelings if he asked, and we refused. And so if he asked for a second date, why, we felt comfortable in refusing. But we didn't date steady like you do now and just go with one boy. We would, as we say, play the field.
That seems strange to me. When I think about history or how it was in the good old days, I thought that the studies would be more prominent than they are now. That's so different than what I was raised to believe.
Well, we had a lot of high school dances, and we had proms, and they were not out of town like they are now, but they were dress-up affairs, and they usually were held locally, you know, held at school. But living on a farm, if I wanted to date, of course, if I wanted to go anyplace, I would date. And I drove a car. I had my license when I was 14. In those days, we could get a license at 14. Of course, there wasn't the traffic, and there weren't as many cars on the road. But we didn't have any other transportation. But when I was in high school, there weren't a lot of boys, nor were there a lot of girls. It wasn't as populous. Enrollment wasn't as great. But I dated boys from Toledo. You see, I lived near Toledo and dated boys in the Toledo high schools, too. If a boy would ask for a date, well, we usually go with them at least once. And if we liked them again, maybe. But we had freedom of choice. And in between, we'd go with someone else who asked us. And it was the general pattern of dating that we went with different people.
Did they have to meet your parents first?
No.
No? I'm going to have to talk to my parents if this is how easy it was back then.
Well, I don't remember, but usually our families knew each other.
That's true.
Well, even though we were in a rural area, there were old established families, and usually they knew who we were, and the boys always came to the house for us. They came in the house, and if they didn't know our parents, they did before they left the house. They were introduced.
Well, that's much better.
Well, it just wasn't thought of, and I dated from the time I was about 14 and then always all through college. And when I was in college, we had about the same dating patterns. They were pretty much the same. Of course, some people at that time, by that time, had narrowed it down to someone they liked particularly well. And then they went steadier. They became engaged. We still dated others if we were not committed.
It's so hard for me to comprehend. So how was it that you finally ended up getting married after you'd been friends for so long?
Well, as I said, our families were such good friends that oftentimes when I was at home in the summertime, I would go up to Lambertville to see his folks, and oftentimes he'd stop in and see my folks in the wintertime when he was in baseball. He was signed up after his freshman year, and he signed up with the Toledo Mudhens then. They had farmed him out a couple of years, and then he was noticed by John McGraw, who was then the manager of the New York Giants.
Your husband was a baseball player?
Yes, that's what he did. He went into professional ball when he was 19, after his freshman year in college. I neglected to tell you that when it came time to go to college, he didn't know where he wanted to go, so because I was going to Albion, and he went to Albion. I always felt a little bad about it, because I felt I could have treated him a little better in college, because he was very homesick, and he wasn't too happy at Albion, and so he he finally did transfer to what was then Michigan State Normal School, which is now Eastern Michigan University. He went there 1 year, and then he went into baseball.
Did he have to give up school once he started playing?
Yes. As I said, he was noticed by John McGraw, and the Giants then bought him from the Toledo Mudhens. Let's see, he was found out by the Giants then for experience, and I think it was after a year he was with the Giants that we started dating. He had asked if he could come down to Van Wert to see me, and I said, sure. So we dated off and on that year and finally started dating steadily. We decided that we would get married in the fall of 1932, because that following year the Giants either had to trade him or keep him, because they had farmed him out for 3 years. He had pitched some for the Giants and had been farmed out to Columbus. He had a very successful career in double-A ball with Columbus that year, and he won 14 games and lost one.
That's great.
Just in from July to the end of the season, and then the Giants recalled him.
He was a pitcher?
Yes, he was a right-handed pitcher.
Was baseball just becoming popular, or had it been popular?
Oh, no, it had always been popular before that, a long time. When we were in baseball, there were only 8 major league teams in each league, so actually, they were not as diluted as they are now. You really had to be a good player, because they were more selective. There were only 16 major league clubs, and of course, he was owned by the Giants.
How was the money? If they were so selective, were they paid well?
Well, no. No, they were not. By today's standards, they were not. But you must remember that these days were during the Depression, when hardly anyone had any work or had any money. And the year we were married, his salary was $4,600 with the New York Giants as a full-time pitcher. The year we were married, as the following spring, we went to spring training in Los Angeles, and we had permission to stay out of the hotel, not with the ball club. So we went out to Los Angeles in January, and of course spring training started near the end of February. By the way, we were in the earthquake out there too. At that time we had a terrible earthquake. That's another story. But anyway, while we were out in Los Angeles, all the banks closed. And I can remember so well that we had a check cash for $25. It doesn't sound like anything today, but $25 would buy our groceries for a month. We had this check cash, and that's all the money we had. And I remember we went down to the market where the man had cashed our check, and my husband said, well, I'll get the money from the Giant Ball Club for you so you won't be out that money. And the store owner said, oh, forget it. He said, if the bank doesn't reopen, I'll just frame the check.
Does your husband have a card?
Yes, he has a Goody card, number 239.
Do you have any copies of it?
No. My grandchildren do.
They were on display at the museum before, weren't they?
Yes.
In town?
Yes. When the museum had my husband's memorabilia, a display of his baseball memorabilia, we had 2 cards. One was an autographed one, and both of these belonged to my grandson. They were purchased, I think, in Chicago at a collector's sale.
So your husband was a celebrity?
Well, he never thought about being a celebrity. Like now, there's more media exposure. In those days, there was only the radio, and the Giants didn't permit their home games to be broadcast. And travel differed also. When we left Los Angeles, I drove home with one of the baseball writer's wives, and Roy went by train with the ball club, which he had to do. The ball players traveled entirely by train. They did not fly.
A bit more economical?
No, there wasn't the flying facilities were not good. In Columbus, Larry McPhail, the general manager of the Columbus Redbirds at the time, had tried flying with his ball club. In fact, my husband was one of the first ones ever to fly, and they got in a terrible storm. I don't know what kind of a plane it was that they were flying, a small plane. They had to make a forced landing, and it was quite an experience, and they couldn't take the risk with the ball club. Later on, I did fly to San Francisco when flying was a little more popular. It was when I had two children by that time, and it took me 14 hours from Chicago to San Francisco. So you know flying wasn't good. And there were no pressurized cabins at that time. I remember the pilot had called to the stewardess and said, check the baby and see if she's still breathing. So it was rather a scary experience. The ball clubs didn't travel by plane at all. They traveled by train. And the Giants always had a private car, and they also provided a car for the sports riders. New York Giants, well, Yankees too, had probably more press coverage than any other ball clubs, because in New York at that time there were, I don't know how many newspapers, 7 or 8, and these sports writers traveled with the ball club, and they'd like to because they had their own private car also.
Your husband did well with the Giants, didn't he?
Yes, that was the year in 1933 the Giants won the pennant in the World Series. So the first year we were married, we were in the World Series. They played Washington.
And your husband was pitching?
My husband was on the pitching staff that was called the Big Four, consisting of Carl Hubbell, Hal Schumacher, Fred Fitzsimmons, and Roy Parmalee. And that's the way the sports writers wrote them up. A couple weeks ago, someone told me that on one of the quizzes they had on radio, I think it was radio, that one of the questions was, what major league ball player was nicknamed Tarzan? And they couldn't answer this question, but anyway, it was my husband.
Tarzan?
Yes. One of the sports writers in New York had nicknamed him Tarzan. Roy was very complimenting because he felt it was because of his physique. We laughed about it later because we talked to the sports writer, and he said, no, it was always because he was always out on a limb. He was kind of wild in his pitching.
So did your husband always play for the Giants?
No, he was traded after 3 years that we were there together. In other words, he was about 6 years with the Giants. And we were traded to the St. Louis Cardinals. And they were known as the Gas House Gang. I don't know whether that's well known now. It probably is by baseball fans. There were some very illustrious baseball players at that time with the St. Louis Cardinals. Dizzy Dean and his brother Daffy, as they called him, and Pepper Martin, and a fellow called Ducky Midwick. They were all very well-known ball players.
Why were they called the Gas House Team?
Well, the Gas House Gang, just some of the players were in this gang because they were pranksters, as you know. And in those days, the fellow that played ball loved to play ball. It was a job that they enjoyed doing. It wasn't big business like it is now. To me, it's a little pathetic to see ball players because they're so materialistic now, and they seem to be in it for the money more than for the fun. And the Gas House Gang, well, they really had a lot of fun. But they were serious and good ball players, too. We were only with the team a year, and then Roy always had good luck against the Chicago Cubs. I don't think that any time he ever pitched against them that they won. And so the Cubs wanted him, and they bought him from the St. Louis Cardinals.
Can't beat him, join him, huh?
Yes, at least he got on the team.
Or buy him, I should say.
Well, we went to Chicago the next year, and he was not used a lot in Chicago. This was a disappointment to him because he was big and strong. He's a husky fellow, and he needed to be worked regularly, like every fourth day. We enjoyed being there. Well, it was not to his advantage to be with the ball club where he wasn't being worked regularly. So this came at a time when he's near the end of his career in the majors, and Chicago sold him to Minneapolis. And we went to the Minneapolis ball club, which at that time was double-A ball.
Was the depression over yet? Was the money any better?
Well, no, not too much better. Nothing compared with today. I think probably we had the highest salary when we were with the Cubs. I can't remember exactly what it was. We went to Minneapolis, and he did so well there that he was drafted back into the major leagues, but this time to the American League with the Philadelphia Athletics. So the following year, we went to Philadelphia to live, and we were with Philadelphia just briefly. Connie Mack, one of the great managers, was managing the athletics at that time. He was a real gentleman, and no one ever called him Connie, even the players. They all called him Mr. Mack. My husband went in the office to see him and said, "Mr. Mack, are you going to keep me or not? I need to know, because I don't want to bring my family to live in Philadelphia if I'm going to be traded." Mr. Mack said, "No, you're going to stay with us, Roy." Well, we moved into Philadelphia, and by this time we had a little boy. Our son and the maid and I went to Philadelphia to live, and we were there probably, I don't remember exactly, about a month or two, when Mr. Mack called him in and said that Louisville, they had, I think, an understanding with Louisville. But anyway, Louisville needs a seasoned pitcher, he said. They had all young pitchers, and they wanted Roy. So Mr. Mack said, "Roy, I promised you'd stay here, so we'll still meet your salary." In other words, in AA ball, they wouldn't be paying him as much as they would in the majors. And the athletics met the difference in salary of what Louisville would pay us and what we would have made in Philadelphia. We had to go to Louisville. We had no choice. There was no arbitration or anything in those days. When you were owned, and you had to do what they told you. We went to Louisville, and that year my husband pitched Louisville into the Little World Series. He had a really good year with Louisville. And then that year I played a lot of golf. I played about 5 days a week when the fellows were on the road. And ball players used to have month-long road trips, and because they traveled by train. And I played golf when he was gone. I played with the manager's wife, and she and I were really the only golfers in the club. She told me, she should not have told me, that she talked to her husband. Now she knew, and they knew, and we also knew that Indianapolis wanted Roy. And she told her husband, "If you trade Roy to Indianapolis, you need not come home tonight." And she really meant it. She was that type of person, very decisive, and he said, "Any day I'm going to run my ball club so you can have a golfing partner." And she told me about this, but what really happened was that we did stay another year when really we should have been traded. Well, from there we went to San Francisco, and the Red Sox by this time had a working agreement with Louisville, and they needed a pitcher in San Francisco, and so the following year we went to San Francisco. From there, my husband finally got his release, and we came back to Toledo, where our home was, and we finished him with the Toledo Mudhens, where he'd started.
What do you mean released?
Well, he was released from his contract, from ownership. He negotiated so that he could get his release and go to Toledo, and release from that ball club. That was before the season was over.
So his last season was with the Toledo Mudhens?
Yes, he started there and he finished there. We were delighted because we had our own home in Lambertville, and it made it nice for me because we had two children by this time, and it was good to be home.
What was it like for you to be the wife of a professional ball player? Was it hard being on the move all the time or living without your husband for months at a time?
It was. I suppose maybe it was when I look back, it might have seemed hard, but it was just our way of life and we expected it. We wives knew it was that way, and while the ball players were on the road, why the wives would get together. When I lived in New York, when I was first married, I used to come home. I would drive home by myself, and I would come from New York and stay the month at home, maybe with my folks and with his folks too. First year I did that quite often.
Mrs. Parmalee, is there a favorite ball club of yours?
Of the teams we were on, you mean, that we played with?
Yeah.
That my husband played with?
Yes.
Yes, I would say that the favorite ball club was the New York Giants. Of course, we were longer there, but the wives were very congenial, and we spent a lot of time together when the fellows were on the road, and the ball players were all very friendly. They were all for one and one for all. It was a very cohesive team. And then we socialized a lot. We went out evenings together a lot too, you know, in pairs or groups. So I think that I would say the Giants were my favorite team.
So does that make New York your favorite city?
No. I liked every city I lived in, I think, but I always used to say that when we were still in baseball that if I ever retired, I'd like to retire to Minneapolis because it was such a beautiful city and we had a nice place to live. We were just a block from Lake Calhoun, and you know, there are five lakes in the city, and I used to ride a bike around the five lakes for exercise, you know, there when I was there. But I liked it very much there because we could swim and do the outdoor things and besides baseball.
Mrs. Parmalee, earlier you said that when you went to Philadelphia, it was you, your son, and a maid. How is it that you had a maid during the Depression?
Well, because of the type of life that we lived, I led the life that my husband did, and by the time we had our son, we were playing baseball partly at night and partly in the daytime. So I had to have someone to watch him. Well, I always took a girl from home, and it was usually a girl from high school. They liked to travel. I never had any trouble finding someone who was willing to go. And they always took care of Roy Jr. He wasn't really Jr., but Roy. And we would take the girl with us. And she was the nursemaid, really, for him. And every place that I would go, I would take her along. And she lived with us.
So it was more like a nanny.
Well, sort of. I mean, she waited table and did things like that, too, but light housework she did.
Well, did she take the experience as payment, or did you give her some kind of salary?
No, she was paid. Mm-hmm. We paid something like $7 a week in those days, which was good pay. It was more than the colored help got in Louisville. I know, because when we were in Louisville, the people we rented our house from wanted us to keep their card made, but we had our own, so we didn't want a second one. But the lady said, well, Daisy just wouldn't have any income when they went north and while we were renting their house. And so she asked us if we would keep her to do our laundry. And she used to do our laundry for $1 a week. But I never had nerve enough to let her ever do sheets or heavy laundry like that because she did it all by hand. And I asked the lady we rented the house from why they didn't have an electric sweeper or electric wash machine or anything. And she said, well, they just didn't know how to take care of it. So they did everything by hand.
That's so hard.
I know, it seems strange to us. But remember, there was segregation in those days, too. I was so shocked when I first went to St. Louis, because I had never experienced it before, when I saw entrances for colored only and for white only. And I said, this was really a shocker for me, because I had never experienced it before.
I would never be able to handle it.
Things have really changed since then. And certainly for the better. It must have been very hard.
Were there any black ball players? Probably
not then. You see, Jackie Robinson.
Mrs. Parmalee went on to say that Jackie Robinson was the first and that it had come later, but I dubbed over it. Do you have any records of your experience, like a diary or a journal or something?
Sarah, I would have given anything if I had kept a journal. I didn't, but Roy's mother started scrapbooks when he first went into baseball, and I kept them up afterward, and so I have those scrapbooks, and they're probably priceless because we have a lot of coverage from the newspapers, especially the New York papers.
What about writing a book of your own?
Well, I have.
You have? Well, just take the initiative.
I do have a manuscript, and I really need to do, it needs more pages, and I haven't really touched it for about 2 years, but I do have the manuscript, and I hope someday to have ambition enough to finish it and submit it.
Well, maybe you could use an interview like this or one like it to get those last few pages you need.
I think I need a little bit more than that.
I try. I'm trying to be helpful. Mrs. Connolly, thank you so much for the time you've taken. You've taken to do this twice now since I lost the first copy.
Oh, you're welcome, Sarah. I hope I contributed a little something to history. It goes a long way back.
It does. Thank you.